All right. You may take a seat. Thank you, worship team, for wrapping us up with the worship set this morning. Here's how we're going to end our time this weekend together. We're going to end our time by considering how to live until all things are new. How to live until all things are new. And the reason why I think this is a great place to end and wrap up our time is because we spend a lot of time thinking about the future, thinking about the new heaven and the new earth and the absence of brokenness and pain and shame because God has made all things new. We focus a lot on the hardships, the hurt, and the difficulties in our lives, even in this moment. And we've been reminded of the fact that God has done something, is doing something, and will do something. And so we've been very laser focused on the challenges, the pain, and the hurt in our lives. But our lives are so much more than the difficult things that we're walking through. And so I want to equip you and give you a resource for how you can look at the entirety of your life and be ready and equipped to live until what we've talked about this weekend is finally and fully true. So how to live until all things are new is kind of the idea that we're going to spend the next few moments talking about. And to set up where we're going, I want to talk to you about the time I ran a half marathon. So this was December of 2021, so last year. So about last spring of 2021, my friends David and Sean, they were like, let's run the Dallas Half Marathon together in December. And I was like, no, I don't like to run more than 2 miles, if that. Why would I want to spend my time running 13.1 miles? But then I caved and I said yes, and we decided to run this half marathon. How many of you guys have run a half marathon or a full marathon before? We got some runners in the room. I love it. So we decided to run this half marathon. Up on the screen is my Strava record of my miles during the half marathon. And so I'm exposing myself and how fast and slow I was running at different points during this half marathon. So last December, the first mile, it's so crowded. You can't even really run. You might as well just walk because it's literally hundreds of people and you have no space. And then it kind of spreads out, and then you get to running and getting in your zone. My pace that I was aiming for was about 10 minutes and 30 seconds per mile. I know some of you runners are like, that is so slow, and I agree. But that was my pace. And so for the next, I think it was like 4 or 5 miles. I was running at that pace. It was awesome. I was listening to music. I was energized. This was easy. I was like, dude, I'm going to crush this half marathon. Until I got to the hills. Until I got really tired. And I was like, why am I even doing this? Why am I choosing? Why am I paying money, $200, to run around this city that I can run around for free anytime I want? And so I was discouraged. There were moments where I was stopped, where I was walking, where I needed some energy, and there were people on the side, like, encouraging you and cheering you on. There were people giving you goo packets to give you energy, that extra sugar that you need. And so I would pick back up and be encouraged, and then I would slow down and walk a little bit. I would pick back up, and so that's where you see those miles where I was running at a pace of like 12 or 13 minutes. And then near the end, I was like, dude, I have 2 more miles. I can do this. I've done 11. Like, let's go. I'm going to sprint all the way to the end. And I finished the marathon. These are some pictures of my family and friends who were encouraging me, people that I ran the marathon with and finished with and got the gold medal and the plastic cape that they give you. Congratulations for finishing the half marathon. But to accomplish that feat that maybe I'll never do again, is I had to be consistent, I had to train, I had to be determined, I had to be encouraged by others to keep up with the training regimen, and then I just had to do it. I had to run the half marathon. And the reason I start with that story is because I think our lives, our experiences here on this earth are much like running a half marathon. At some points in your life, it's like, it's super easy, everything's all good, the birds are chirping, the sky is blue, all of your relationships are peaceful, you're crushing it in all of your classes, your relationships are great, I mean, it's awesome. And then there's other times where you're like, whew, I need a break, this is tough, this is hard, this is really difficult, and I need people to encourage me, and I need people to run with me, and I need people to spur me on to keep going. And then there's times where you're nearing the end, right, of a season of life or a difficult season, and you're going, man, it is so close, I'm so near the end, let me keep fighting, let me keep pushing until I'm done. And so life is pretty similar to a half marathon. Like I said, there's highs and there's lows, but it's a journey. So how do we live and successfully run this marathon of life, if you will? I'm going to invite you to turn in your Bibles to Luke chapter 12, and this will be kind of our jumping off point into our content for the morning. Luke chapter 12, verses 35 through 40. And this is a teaching that Jesus is giving to this large crowd of people, but in particular to his disciples. And he's helping them understand how they are to live life now in all aspects of their life in light of the fact that one day all things will be made new. One day Jesus will return. So we're in the middle of his teaching in Luke chapter 12, verse 35 through 40. And he says this, stay dressed for action and keep your lamps burning. And be like men who are waiting for their master to come home from the wedding feast, so that they may open the door to him at once when he comes and knocks. Blessed are those servants whom the master finds awake when he comes. I want you to pay attention to that verse. Blessed are those servants whom the master finds awake when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will dress himself for service and have them recline at the table, and he will come and serve them. So the master is coming back, and he is going to serve his servants. And that's a reference to us, that one day all things will be new, and in some crazy and amazing way, the God of the universe will serve us through the things that he has provided for us, the blessings and the joys of eternity. Verse 38 says, if he comes in the second watch or in the third watch and finds them awake, blessed are those servants, you and I. But know this, that if the master of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have left his house to be broken into. Verse 40, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour that you do not expect. The Son of Man is coming at an hour that you do not expect. And so Jesus is telling his disciples then, and his disciples today, you and I, that we must be ready, because the moment where he will complete his work of redemption and restoration, when he will make all things new, when he will wipe away every tear from our eyes, can happen today, can happen at any moment. And because that's true, you and I must keep watch. We must be ready for when he comes. And so all things are becoming new, and one day they will be finally and fully new. But until then, I want us to look at some necessary qualities for life until all things are new. So for the marathon of life, if you will, these are characteristics that should mark you and I as followers of Jesus. If we're going to be ready, if we're going to be watchful servants, waiting for when our Redeemer, our Savior, our Rescuer comes to make all things new, if we're going to be ready for that moment, these things need to be true of us. These characteristics need to mark our lives. And so the first characteristic is that you and I, if we want to be ready for whenever he returns, the way that we live until all things are new, the first thing that we should do is to walk dependently. Walk dependently. John chapter 15 and verse 5, it says this, "I am the vine," Jesus says, "and you, my disciples, are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing." And so Jesus is saying that without God, you literally can physically do nothing. Can you think about this for a second? You are not making your heart beat. You are not making your lungs work. You're not making your brain function. You're not making yourself be able to listen or to speak or to move. It is in God that we live and move and have our being. He sustains you in every single moment of every single day. How often do you think about that? That literally, apart from him, we can do nothing. And then in a different way, without God, you can do nothing of eternal spiritual value and significance. If you're not connected to him, if he says, "I'm the vine that you should be connected to, and if you're connected to me, you will bear much fruit, and apart from me, you can do nothing." I saw an illustration of this recently. Y'all remember a couple of weeks ago? It was a Sunday afternoon, just a normal Sunday afternoon. It was hot, the sun was out, and all of a sudden, it just started to go dark. And this storm came in over Dallas, or at least where I was. I know it was all over the Richardson area. This storm with these almost hurricane-like winds just came in. It was pouring rain. The wind was blowing left and right. And I heard the sound of this crack. And I looked out my window of my house, and I saw this picture of my tree in the front yard. Just literally just broken down. These branches broken off of the tree. And that's the imagery that I want you to think of when you think of John 15, 5. What happens to a branch that is broken off from a tree? Does it continue to sprout leaves? Does it continue to bear fruit? Does it continue to grow? No, it's dead. The leaves start to die, and it is taken away, thrown into the fire, or uses firewood, or whatever else, because it's dead. It no longer serves a purpose. And in the same way, God says, Jesus says, that when you are detached from me, apart from me, you can, one, literally, physically not do anything, and you can't do anything of spiritual significance and value for eternity either. And so we must walk dependently. Now, what does it mean to walk dependently with God? It means that every day when you wake up, you surrender and commit your day, your thoughts, your attitudes, your actions, your schedule, you surrender it to God and you say, "God, do with it what you will. Help me to be a faithful servant of yours." And one of the easiest and simplest ways that you can do that is by having some dedicated time to spend with God as consistently as you can. And here's what I'm going to say. You might feel like I'm calling you out. I've spent the last decade in student ministry, and I've talked to students over and over about having a time, place, and plan for spending time in God's Word, for praying, for giving yourself an opportunity to reflect on what God might be doing in your life. And one of the common refrain among students is, "When I wake up in the morning, I'm just too sleepy. You know, I can't really get focused on spending time in the Word, and so I'll just do it at nighttime. I'll just do it in the evening. Or I'll just do it at lunchtime." And here's the truth. You don't end up doing it. Because you get into the busyness of the day, of school and classes and extracurricular activities and friendships and family, and then your 5 hours of homework. And if you do spend time in the Word, it's like this, really quickly, let me do this to check it off of the box. to check off this to-do list of spending time with God. And so maybe the challenge for you is to be honest with yourself that, you know what? Even though I say I'll spend time with the Lord later on in the day because I'm too sleepy or tired in the morning, you really don't. Maybe some of you do, but I would venture to guess that the majority of you, if you're not spending time in God's word in the morning when you wake up, you're probably not during the course of the day. And even I see that in my own life. On the days when I'm like, oh man, this is a really busy morning. I'm helping with Winslow or I have something really early. Oh yeah, I'll read the Bible at lunchtime or I'll read it in the evening and spend time with the Lord. Like it just doesn't happen. And so I'm not accusing you and saying that that's not something I experience. I experience it too. And so I want to encourage you that if you want to walk dependently, that you need to decide, hey, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to wake up 15, 20 minutes earlier. I'm going to move somewhere else where I'm awake. I'm going to get some coffee. Or I'm going to walk outside. I'm going to take a shower to wake myself up so that I can spend time with Jesus. Because apart from him, I can do nothing of spiritual value and significance. And spending time with him in his word, praying, worshiping him, is the prime way that you can do that. And so, if you want to know how to live until all things are new, the first quality that you should have is that you should walk in daily dependence on God. The second one is an attitude of gratitude. So walk dependently, and secondly, attitude of gratitude. I was reading through the Gospel of Luke like some of you were as we've been going through the Gospel of Luke for our Join the Journey reading over the last, month and a half or so. And in Luke 17, I had read this story and heard this story, and you probably have too, so many times. And a question in there struck me in a new way in this last reading. So I'll read it to you again. Luke chapter 17, verses 11 through 17, really quickly. It says this, on the way to Jerusalem, he was passing along between Samaria and Galilee. This is Jesus. He's on his way to Jerusalem where he's going to be crucified, and he's passing through these towns in Samaria. Verse 12, and as he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers. These lepers were sick. There was sores and boils all over their body. They were the outcasts of society, and Jesus meets these 10 guys who had no hope in life, and they stood at a distance, and they lifted up their voices saying, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And when he saw them, he said to them, go and show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were cleansed. So as they were walking, their skin began to be healed. As they were walking, they were no longer sick. All things about their physical well-being was being made new as they were going to the temple. And then verse 15 says, then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, he turned back. He stopped. He noticed what God had done, and he went back, praising God with a loud voice, and he fell on his face at the feet of Jesus, giving him thanks. Now he was a Samaritan. This is a verse that really struck me. Then Jesus answered, were not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? That question, where are the 9? In other words, there were people whose lives were radically changed by Jesus, and they just kept going. They just kept living their lives. God had intervened in the pain and brokenness in their world, and they didn't even stop long enough to say thank you. And that just challenged me to even think about how I am ungrateful in so many ways, far too often. And maybe you are too. That God has blessed you with so many different blessings in your life, and you don't even know it because you haven't even stopped long enough to reflect on God's goodness and kindness and provision for you. And so I pray that what would be true of every single one of us is that we would be marked by an attitude of gratitude. If you're going to live in a way that honors God until all things are new, being a person marked by gratitude is so important. Along those same lines, here's the third characteristic of how you are to live until all things are new. Take time to encourage others. Take time to encourage others. Hebrews 10, verse 24, another familiar passage to you. It says, and let us consider, let us think about, let us be creative, let us be intentional, if you will, is what the author is saying, how to stir up one another to love and good works. And so to take time to encourage others means that you, teenager, high schooler, in 2022, one of the most powerful things that you can do is to use your words and say to someone who has been there for you, someone who has encouraged you, someone who has stood by your side in the midst of difficult circumstances, and say thank you. Thank you for your role in my life. Whether it's a parent, a small group leader, another of your friends, to just stop and look them in the eye. Not send them a snap. Look them in the eye and say, thank you for how you have been God's grace and kindness in my life in these specific ways. That's a great way for you to take time and encourage others. Or you can be a source of encouragement in someone else's life by just acknowledging the difficulties that they might be experiencing. It could be as simple as a text where you say, hey, I know that you're going through a difficult time in life right now. I know that you're hurting. I'm praying for you, and I'm grateful for you, and I love you. Take time to encourage others. Here's the next one. The next way that you can live until all things are new, a characteristic that should mark you, is to choose godliness. To choose godliness. 1 Timothy 4, verse 8, it says this, for while bodily training is of some value, godliness is of value in every way, as it holds promise for the present life and for the life to come. Choosing to live your life in devotion and surrender and submission to God has value both in this life and in the one to come, is what the Apostle Paul is saying to Timothy and to you and I today. That godliness should mark us. If we are to live in a way that honors God until all things are new, if we are to be watchful, we are to be people that choose godliness. And so maybe the question for you is, how can I choose godliness in my life right now? I don't know. But maybe you might need to change your friend group. Maybe the group of friends that you hang out with, they don't want to choose godliness. They want to choose the pleasures of this world. And maybe they're influencing you and tempting you to live that same life. And maybe what you need to do is make a decision, the difficult social decision in high school to say, these can't be my people because these people are not encouraging me to walk with God. Maybe that's what you need to do to choose godliness. Maybe it's to break up with that guy or girl because you're in a toxic relationship, an unhealthy relationship, one that has crossed physical boundaries and has knitted your hearts together in ways that you should not do unless it's your spouse. Maybe that's the choice of godliness that you need to make. Maybe it's to ask for forgiveness. Maybe you've hurt someone. Maybe you've said something mean. Maybe you've gossiped about them behind their back, gossip about them on social media. Whatever it might be, maybe the most godly thing that you can do coming out of this weekend is looking at someone in the eye that you've hurt with your words or with your actions and saying, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. And so those who want to live in a way that honors God until all things are new, they choose godliness. And then lastly, those who want to live in a way that honors God until all things are new, so they walk dependently, they have an attitude of gratitude, they take time to encourage others, they choose godliness, and lastly, they have fun. They have fun. Clean, Christ-honoring, joyful fun. Do you know that the Bible encourages you to have fun? Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 15. Here's what it says. So I commend the enjoyment of life, because there is nothing better for a person under the sun than to eat and to drink and to be glad. Then joy will accompany them in their toil all the days of their life that God has given them under the sun. And so Solomon, this wise man, is saying to us that one of the things that should mark us in the difficulties and the challenges that we experience and endure in this life is to have fun, is to surround yourself with people that want to walk with God and to creatively come up with ways that you can enjoy this life, because life is hard enough. And so to surround yourself and to be creative and intentional in coming up with ways for you to have fun. So maybe for you, it's like the question for you is, man, how do I have God-honoring, Christ-exalting, relationship-building fun that doesn't break the law and that doesn't cause me to stumble or not choose godliness? Because that's what people who want to live in a way that honors God until all things are new, that's how they live. And so, in summary, those who want to live in a way that honors God until all things are new, they walk dependently, they have an attitude of gratitude, they take time to encourage others, they choose godliness, and they have fun. And so we're gonna sing in just a moment, but I want to give you a couple points of application that we're gonna give you a chance to practice in the next few moments. And here's the first one. I want to encourage you, invite you, challenge you to consider this. Take some time during your small group time after this to reflect, to pray, and to write down a realistic plan for how you, not other people, how you can set out to walk dependently on the Lord every single day. What's your plan? What's something that's realistic? And if you're a person who doesn't read the Bible on your own at all, who doesn't know how to pray, you probably shouldn't journal, I'm going to read the Bible every single day for 45 minutes, and I'm going to pray for an hour, and it's going to be awesome, and I'm going to feel so close to God. You're setting yourself up for failure, okay? Unfortunately, I want you to gradually and strategically maybe get there someday, one day. But for now, what can you do today? What's a tiny step in the right direction? I want you to take some time to reflect on that. Ask God, God, what would you have me do? In light of my commitments, in light of my life, in light of the way I'm wired, how do you encourage me and invite me to walk dependently with you daily? So that's one thing I want to encourage you to do in your time after we worship in song. Here's the next thing. Maybe you've never done this in your life, and it's going to be really, really hard to do. But here's what I want to challenge you or invite you to do. During your small group time, your time of reflection, take 10 minutes, take 5 minutes, whatever it is for you, and literally just open a page. Maybe it's in your booklet, in your journal, or maybe it's on your phone. And just write down as many things as possible in your life that you can be thankful for. It could be down to something random like, God, thank you that my small intestines work. Because if they don't work, you're in trouble. It could be something as insignificant as that or something more meaningful in your life that you say, God, thank you for your provision of this in my life. Literally, you don't need to think too deeply about it. Just write down just a sentence, just a word. Here's what I'm thankful for. Here's what I'm thankful for. Here's what I'm thankful for. I want to encourage you and give you that opportunity to be marked by gratitude. And then here's something else that you can do. Take some time to encourage others. It might be that you, when you gather together as your small group, you look at someone else in your group and say, thank you for the encouragement that you've been. It might be that you pull one of your leaders aside and say, thank you for how you've spurred me on to love and good deeds. It might be that you text someone that isn't here this weekend and say, man, I'm praying for you. I know you're going through a difficult time, and here's my reminder, encouragement that I'm here for you and I love you and I care about you. Or maybe it's a text to tell them thank you as well. But I want you to take some time and do that. It's a simple text, and it's easy to send if you're thoughtful and intentional about it. And the thing that we're going to do first before we jump into all of those things is to sing. It's to sing and remind ourselves of what we've been hopefully repeatedly reminding ourselves of this whole weekend. That God is making all things new. That he has done something about our pain and our brokenness in our lives and in this world. That he is doing something. He's forming our faith. He's strengthening our faith. He's putting us on display for all to see the kindness and goodness of God in the midst of our pain and brokenness. And that one day all things will be made new. There'll be no more sickness and no more pain and no more death and no more divorce and no more broken relationships and no more hurts and no more anything that is anti the goodness of God. And so that is worth singing about one more time. And so I want to invite you to stand and sing as loud as you can, declaring God's kindness, declaring God's truth, reminding yourself of his favor and goodness in your life.